The briefer says VFR, but that's not the whole story when you fly at night. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Bob Miller is my guest of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's also a flight instructor and flight school owner. Bob is here most Mondays to talk about safety issues. Usually the conversations are inspired by articles in the current edition of Over the Airwaves, and that will be the case today. Bob, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Paul. I enjoy being with you.
Let's talk about your article in the January edition of Over the Airwaves entitled Night Flying Gotchas. This may be a good time of year to talk about this. We often do, you know, back in October or early November, whenever I try to talk to you about this, whenever we're coming up on the change back to Eastern Standard Time in your case, because, you know, suddenly it gets darker. And anybody who is going out and flying to maintain proficiency after work suddenly faces doing it at night. And also anybody who's flying anywhere on a mission after, you know, a 9 to 5. Ends up doing it in the nighttime conditions. What do you think are the big gotchas about nighttime flying?
I think the number one gotcha all the way around is a misunderstanding of a very, very simple term. Many of us really, if you ask an individual to define VFR, visual flight rules, they will oftentimes say, well, it's the apt clouds, the absence of visibility obscuring fog or precipitation. In other words, it's clear air. Well, the real intent of that term really means we have the ability to see and avoid. It has little to do with whether or not there are clouds or fog or precipitation. We must have the ability to see and avoid terrain, obstacles, or other aircraft. So at night, just imagine high overcast skies at 8,000, 9,000 feet. There's no moon. There are no stars. And we're taking off over dark terrain, perhaps over water. And anybody who has been in that kind of an environment on a VFR flight knows immediately that that is not VFR because we simply do not have the ability to see and avoid. Yet our weather briefing, our pre-flight weather briefing indicated that it was clear in a million miles, but no outside lights, no lights on the ground, no ability to see the ground, no ability to see and avoid. Therefore, that night VFR operation becomes, for all intents and purposes, an IFR flight. We need to fly by reference to the instruments, and unless we're trained as an IFR trained pilot, we can run into a problem in quick order. And unfortunately, the accident data bears this out, particularly on several notable flights along the coastal regions of the United States. In Florida, for example, where we take out eastward over the Atlantic or westward out over the Gulf of Mexico on a dark, moonless night, that hapless pilot is IFR immediately, even though the conditions are technically VFR. That's number one.
Well, and you know, it's interesting too, because the FAA does differentiate in the rules in terms of what we're allowed to do between visual meteorological conditions or VMC, and they don't really have an abbreviation or an acronym for it, but there's such a thing as visual navigation conditions. Obviously, sport pilots who have not been trained to fly at night as part of their primary training are not allowed to fly at night legally, and yet they don't really seem to take it the next step and get very specific about the kinds of things that are different between day and night when you're in VFR.
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, I'm a big critic of the three-hour training requirement for even the private pilot. I don't think that's nearly enough to prepare the VFR pilot for night operations for the reason we just described. Number two, if we do get into a situation where we're taking off over a dark area on a moonless, starlit night, many of my colleagues are not aware of the primary instrument that we must pay attention to on that climb-in night VMC, and that's the failure to look at the airspeed indicator. The airspeed indicator is that primary instrument that gives us proof positive as to what we are doing climbing-wise. And if we're not looking at that, we have no clue as to what is really happening to the airplane. So we get airspeed oversights. We have an individual that takes off at a VY climb, maybe 78 knots, And they're not aware of the fact that the airplane is climbing at 96 knots. Well, at 96 knots in a Cessna 172, the airplane's not climbing. And if there's obstacles that cannot be seen, that's going to result in, you know, an obvious collision. Another problem that immediately comes to mind at night, you know, it's surprisingly a number of omissions that we have in the Federal Aviation Regulations. You know, we're required to have kind of equipment on board an airplane, on a GPS-equipped airplane. We have to have a wet compass, you know. That all makes sense. But there's nowhere in the regulations, and I invite our listeners to call in if they can find it anywhere in the regulations that suggests that we should have a flashlight on board the airplane in the cockpit. If the panel suddenly goes dark and it's a night, moonless, starless night, we could be in coal blackness inside the cockpit. And without the ability to see the panel, without a flashlight, that becomes a problem. So those are three big ones right there that we've looked at. We've looked at VFR, is not really VFR, airspeed oversights, and suddenly dark panels.
Okay, Bob, well, since we've covered the ones that happen inside the airplane, at least the ones you wrote about in the January edition, when we come back from the break, let's talk about a couple that are outside the aircraft. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about night gotchas from his article in the January edition of his newsletter. And Bob, you mentioned a couple of other things that can get you at night. One we talked about in a fair bit of detail last week, but it is a little different at night, and that is icing. Why is icing a bigger deal at night?
Because it cannot be seen on the airplane in many cases. Unless our airplane is certified for flight into known icing conditions, few aircraft have icing lights. Those are lights that are beamed off of the fuselage that aim back at the leading edge of the wing. So unless we, again, have a flashlight on board, a fairly significant flashlight to shine out the window and look at the wing, we may not see ice as it accumulates. We also may not know when we're in the clouds at night, surprisingly enough. Again, any type of flying over open, hostile, barren terrain, there's nothing on the ground. There's nights when there's no stars or moonlight out. We may not know we're in the clouds to begin with on an IFR flight. And icing conditions generally only occur inside the clouds. So we may be thinking we're out there in just plain old VFR conditions, and ice can be accumulating, and unless we're watching our airspeed, that can be the same problem we did talk about here a week or so ago.
And this last one you mentioned here is one that I kind of shudder to think about, because I enjoy flying at night, but if you are coming in even to an airport that's well lit, the landing light is really a crucial piece of gear for this mission.
No question about it, Paul. Most of us think that the landing light, you know, many of us do think that's a good way to keep us identifiable to other aircraft, and it certainly helps us as we taxi around. But you're right. When we're coming in and we're looking for a point to flare the aircraft just several feet above the runway, without that landing light reflecting off the pavement ahead, we really don't know for certain where that runway is. We could flare too high and result in an aerodynamic stall, or we could flare too low and literally drive the airplane down through the pavement and do damage to the landing gear. So that landing light is extremely important. Here again, the regulations. You know, the regulations require that we have a landing light for aircraft that are involved in commercial operations, but it's notoriously absent for individuals that are not involved in commercial operations. The regulations do not require that we have a landing light.
Here's a key question, Bob, and this might be the most controversial one you'll have to answer today. And that is, you say it takes more than 3 hours of dual night instruction to properly prepare a private pilot candidate for the risks of night flying. What would you like to see in a perfect world if Randy Babbitt comes and tosses you the baton tomorrow? What notice of proposed rulemaking goes out from Bob Miller?
Well, and this is where a lot of our listeners are going to shudder. I'm putting together an article for an upcoming edition of Over the Airways. It may be a lead article called Death of the 40-Hour Pilot. The 40-hour minimum instruction required for the private pilot certificate was promulgated decades ago. Today, the national airspace system is far more sophisticated. The airplanes that we are flying are far more sophisticated. I would start by just taking that entire part of Part 61, dealing with minimum hours of experience, and really taking a look at that. 3 hours are simply not enough, in my opinion, to adequately prepare. I would think more in the area that we require, for example, solo flight, 10 hours, which there is way too few. I would think more in the area of about 5 to 6 hours minimum of nighttime flight, including night IFR flight for the private pilot certificate. We require 3 hours of under the hood or simulated or actual instrument time. I believe a portion of that instrument time must be provided to the student in night flying operations, because that's where they run into the greatest risk of encountering IFR conditions unexpectedly and suddenly, and yet we provide them no training whatsoever in this regard.
We anticipate your cards and letters. Email would be fine. And if you do have a comment on what Bob just said or anything we talk about on these Aerocasts, you can send them along in email to Paul P, P-A-U-L-P, at Aero, AERO-news.net. Bob, as always, you've given us stuff to think about, and we'll be back for another dose next Monday.
Thank you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
You can find the topics we discuss here on Mondays on Bob Miller's website, overtheairwaves.com. While you're there, join the free list to receive notice when each new issue comes out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.